Welcome to the University of Limerick Research Impact Podcast Series. I'm your host, Christine Brennan. Today, we're going to examine whether digital technology enhances the way we learn and find out whether the move from book to tablet in our schools is the right one. Joining me to explore these questions is Dr. Anne Marcus-Quinn, lecturer in technical communication and instructional design at the University of Limerick. Her research examines how digital teaching and learning resources can be used, developed and shared in order to enhance teaching and learning in Irish education. And in recent years, there has been a major drive to use of technology in our schools, particularly with the introduction of tablets. Is this the right move?
When I first started research in this area, it was very content driven. So everything was down to what materials you were working with, how these were to be presented and so on. But since 2010, with the introduction of the iPad, there is less of a focus on the content and more on the actual device. And technology in education should never be about the technology for technology's sake. It should always be content driven. And that is the most worrying thing here, where you see that schools are making a top-down decision to roll out technology across the board without proper consideration about the content that is available for each individual subject.
So in particular, there's an Irish example in Navan where a school has reversed its decision on the use of iPads. Could you tell us more about that particular case and what we can learn from it?
Okay, so we're talking about the school in Rathoath College. A few years ago, they decided that they would become an iPad-only school. But the decision seems to have been made in a very quick and manner that maybe wasn't given the correct amount of consideration that it should have been given. When a school decides that it is going to take a policy like it is going to be technology driven, often it is done so with a focus on the device rather than the content. And this is what happened in Rathoath. Lots of schools are very tempted by the shiny and new, and they move away from the traditional textbook, thinking that they are making the correct move for their students. But often it's not given a huge amount of thought. Particularly where the burden again of the cost of buying a device like that, like a tablet device, is put onto the parents. That's also a big issue.
But can technology enhance how we learn? It's not just about technology for technology's sake, right? So there is a, how can schools best deploy technology to improve the experience for our students?
Okay, absolutely. Technology can be front and centre of the classroom experience, and it can really enrich that classroom experience for many. If you look at students as well who might have special needs, sometimes having assistive technology can really make the difference between learning or not learning. Okay, but where we have a school deciding, again, top down, that the school is now going to be technology driven and we're getting rid of traditional or hard copy textbooks and moving to content that is digital only, this is an issue where there isn't equity of resources across subjects. In 1999, the government gave the Department of Education money to establish a repository of digital resources for post-primary. Skolnet, you might be familiar with it. And this was a really good initiative. And at this point, they had employed instructional designers and teachers to create content, good digital content, to be used by teachers across the board. What we have seen in the last 20 years, however, is that that drive on creating really good content has fallen by the wayside. So we are seeing a lot of voluntary work by teachers who are creating good content and sharing because they want to contribute to a community of practice or to make good teaching materials available. But we don't have an equity across the subjects. Some subjects have a lot of material. With the rollout of Project Maths a few years ago, we saw a huge surge in materials available, particularly for maths. But if we look at the other side of that, a subject like business studies, there are far fewer resources available for teachers. So if a school has decided that it is going to be a tablet-driven school or personal device and so on with no books, who is going to create the resources? The burden then falls to individual teachers. Teachers are not instructional designers. They don't have the professional training in designing digital teaching materials. Now, teachers are very good to spot what is a good digital resource, you know, what can be easily consumed by their students, what's going to get good results. But knowing what is good doesn't mean that you can create good material. And I'm not saying the teachers can't create good material. We have a lot of teachers who, particularly since the recession, who've come from industry or have postgraduate training in ICT and so on, but they are in the minority. So if they are creating stuff, it's good, but we can't expect every teacher on top of their teaching time without any professional time or the resources necessary to develop, design and develop good material. We can't expect them to just produce them.
And just to follow up on that, Anne, is there a kind of oversight in terms of digital curriculum? You know, when you publish a book with a prestigious publisher, there's a certain peer review there. Is that the case with digital materials?
No, is the quick answer there. In the same way that the department does not prescribe which textbooks that has ever prescribed, which textbooks schools have to use, if any, the same protocol is in place for digital resources. So you could have two schools that are both using digital teaching materials, but the students in each school could be having a very different experience. In one school, you could have a teacher who is using the very best of what's available digitally. And in the other, you may have a teacher who doesn't have any training or expertise in the area. They may be putting together a very basic PowerPoint, which they're sharing. And at the end of the class, maybe if there's notes on a whiteboard, the students are taking a photograph of that, and that becomes the digital record of the class. So the experience is not, there's no equity of experience there for students.
So Anne, you have a recent study that has just been published. Could you talk us through some of the big findings from that?
Okay. This is, the school in Rathoath. And I just want to say that Rathoath is not alone in this type of activity. It's certainly not an anomaly. There are lots of schools across the country who have gone tablet only, but I think that it is very progressive that Rathoath has engaged in this review, because what they are doing is providing the beginnings of a roadmap towards how technology should be embedded in schools. So the findings from this report would be critical, I think, in helping other schools make a decision in terms of to what extent they want to embed technology or devices across the curriculum. Some of the findings that we found in that review, I think distraction was the top one. And again, this is certainly not unique to Rathoath. We're seeing this in many international studies, even at a high a country level, that when you put a personal device in a student's hand, suddenly their experience of how they engage with content, it really changes. When compared, let's say, to how they might have behaved in the traditional computer lab. Because it is a personal device, they can have set up accounts on websites. So they can go and they can engage in personal shopping during class time. And it's very difficult for a teacher to watch for that kind of activity. Now, there are things they can put in place like Google Classroom or Apple Classroom, that kind of thing. But it's an extra task on the teacher who, at the end of the day, is trying to cover whatever lesson plan they've set out. And we did have instances reported to us in that review where parents were getting emails from students during class time, or where students were engaging in online shopping, or they were playing games during class time. So distraction is a key one. Another one of the major findings is around health and well-being. So because students were required to use the device for so many hours in the day, if they had fallen into bad habits around posture or around reading, they were seeing the impact of that after a number of hours, with some students reporting that they were getting headaches, or they were getting a pain at the back of their neck from how they were sitting and so on. All of those issues that really need to be addressed. Student progress is another contentious issue that arose from the findings. So it's very difficult to evidence this in particular, because we don't have enough data and you'd really need access to student exam results. But where parents had a couple of children go through the school, perhaps the older sibling had gone through without the iPad, so had a very traditional classroom experience, and the younger child had an experience of being iPad only, the parents were able to make a comparison there between their exam results, and some of them reported that the older child had done better than the younger sibling even though when both of those children came through sixth class, they would have appeared to have been on the same academic trajectory. So again, you would need a lot more further study here to really show evidence. But I think that these initial findings are very interesting, and it shows how critical it is that a really thorough and considered approach is taken when a school decides to become technology focused.
How did you engage stakeholders in your research and in this study in particular?
When we were invited to do this review, it was a very positive experience. So I think everyone wanted the best possible result here. So they were quite willing to speak with us. So we spoke with parents, we spoke with students, we spoke with teachers. We also visited a number of other schools, some of which had been technology focused and had gone back to a more traditional approach, and some which had decided that a blended approach was best. So they were using devices, but the devices didn't belong to the individual students. They were, the school owned them and they were maintained by the school, and that seemed to work quite well. So it was really interesting to see a wealth of experience there and have that reported in a very open and frank way.
Do we have any insight to the drivers for schools to embrace technology and to employ a technology-driven mandate? Is there any, there's no national policy that's driving this in particular? Do we have any evidence of this?
This is a very contentious issue. It's very difficult. It is up to each and every school to decide how and to what extent they want to embed technology in their school and what their school culture is going to be around technology. Some schools will come out and they'll declare that they are a distinguished school, or you have teachers declaring that they are Apple teachers, distinguished Apple teachers, and so on. And we have a similar kind of a thing for Microsoft and other providers of technology. But it's interesting because we never had this push before the technology. Like, we didn't have teachers announcing that they were Folens teachers or Educo teachers and so on. So the technology seems to be placing this at the heart of the kind of digital agenda.
So Anne, can I just ask you a personal question? What brought you to this particular area of research? What's your own personal research journey?
I came to the University of Limerick in 2001 to do the grad dip in technical communication, and I got really interested in the design and development of teaching materials. An early project that I was involved with was with Barbara Geraghty here in Japanese, and she wanted to develop a digital version of what she was doing in class with A4 size cards. And that was a really wonderful project because we were translating a really successful method that she had based on the silent way in class to teach the 42 hiragana characters into, we were trying to create a digital version of that. But it was really successful. The students loved it. And we found that Barbara noticed in her classes that the speed of acquisition of the hiragana characters had doubled when the students were using the digital version, and what the students really liked about it. And she hadn't realised how teacher focused her class had been when she was using the cards. They had to ask Barbara for the prompt to get the sound associated with each character, whereas when they had the digital version, they could click on it as many times as they wanted. So it really put the learning into their hands. We actually won an Ergus language label for that project in 2007. So I think that was really the spark that drove me and to decide to pursue research in the creation of good digital teaching materials. So my own PhD then looked at the English curriculum for Junior Cycle and identified six poems that were common to both ordinary and higher level English, and I developed a digital version of those poems. So again, bringing in the weaker students, the higher achieving students, trying to provide something within that one resource for everyone. But when I did that research between 2005 and 2011, the focus was very much on the content. So I wasn't thinking about the student having a personal device in their hands and using it in that way. Instead, I was very focused on the content. I designed and developed it with a number of teachers. And what came out of that was four different types of use. So you could see the same resource being used in four very different ways, depending on what the teacher wanted out of their class.
So it touches on, you know, the whole, the importance of evidence, right? You know, this content works and you have evidence to show that the student experience and the student's ability to learn has improved. I suppose, what advice do we have here for governments in terms of how they develop policy and the use of technology in education?
Okay. Well, I think one of the big problems here in Ireland is that we want to have a world-class education system, but we're not prepared to put the money behind it. Okay, so that can be said across all areas of education, primary, secondary, or third level. But what we have seen in recent years is a drive to push technology into schools. And the junior cycle reform has really accelerated this because of the classroom-based assessments. There is now a need to have some aspect of technology that may not have been there a few years ago. The money that is available to put technology into schools is usually just enough to set up an infrastructure, but certainly not enough to put a personal device or even, you know, trolleys of tablets or trolleys of Chromebooks or Microsoft Surface Goes, whatever you like. There isn't enough to actually do that. There's enough to get things set up, but not to take it to where it needs to get for you to actually have a constructive experience or a positive experience of technology in the classroom.
So I'm just wondering, you know, when we're talking about teacher supply as, mm-hmm. as an issue,
yes.
are we also saying that the government really should be looking at instructional designer supply and specialising in education? I mean, it's not, the tail is wagging the dog here so much
yep.
with you introduce technology, but if you don't have the content, what's the point?
Absolutely. I'm really glad you raised that. If we look at what they have in Australia, many schools will have an instructional designer so that they have someone to create bespoke content in collaboration with the teacher. And because they are in situ there, they can get usability feedback on how good or how well that resource is working in the classroom so that they can then incorporate that feedback into it and they can roll out a better version of that resource. We are a long way off that here, but that really is kind of a gold standard. You also get a lot of teachers in Australia, again, looking to take up some kind of training in instructional design, again, because they are given the professional time and the resources to do so. And that is critical to it being successful or unsuccessful.
And then on the flip side, and in many schools in Ireland, it's probably early days to say yet what the impacts are. But what do you think are the potential impacts of poorly deployed technology in our schools?
Students using digital resources, be it on a personal device or in the computer lab, can look very engaged. They can look busy, they can be clicking, look like there's a lot of learning going on. But when it actually comes down to an assessment, or if you ask them afterwards, what can they actually recall? We're at an early stage yet, but I don't think that we can show the technology is better than our traditional classroom practices. We need to be very careful before we replace one with the other because it's not neutral.
I suppose just looking back on the parents that might be listening to this podcast and teachers that are potentially listening, have you any advice as to what they should be looking for in terms of how they would embed digital technology in their schools?
This comes right back to where we began. I think content needs to be front and centre of any kind of digital experience. There's no point in having the best device possible or the best infrastructure if you don't have anything to put on there. It all comes down to what is actually being used. And I think it's really important that parents get involved and they look at the kind of resources that they're children are using in school and that they keep themselves informed as to how and what their children are learning from and are using. It's really important that you see actual rigorous learning taking place and not just surface level learning. It's very easy to parrot off, you know, what you've been presented with in a very poor PowerPoint, but to see actual deep learning taking place is a very different experience.
So can I ask you just to conclude, Anna, what are the other kind of potential areas for examination in your research? What other spheres are you looking at?
I think that the student experience of technology at second level in Ireland is so diverse that we haven't even scratched the surface as to what works and what doesn't work. It is really difficult to engage in that kind of research because getting access to schools is really difficult. And that's because the Irish curriculum is so chock-a-block. There's everything is very exam focused, and there is so little time for the teacher to actually step outside of that and to engage in anything else, to really see what's working and what's not working. That is not any school's fault or any teacher's fault. That is just the way the curriculum is at the moment. With the move away from the terminal assessment being less high stakes, we may see more room in the curriculum for that kind of conversation to take place, that kind of research to take place. But at the moment, it's really difficult. We need to know what works and what doesn't work for students. And the only way we can find that out is by getting in there and talking to them. So it would be fantastic to see that space created.
You've been listening to Dr. Anne Marcus-Quinn, lecturer in technical communication and instructional design at the University of Limerick. This research is supported by the European Commission and the Loudmeath Education and Training Board. If you'd like to find out more about how University of Limerick research is changing the world, check out our other podcasts in the series or read our case studies on ul.ie/researchimpact.